This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
It's an honor to welcome to the studio Dr. Michael Weber. He is director of UVA Cancer Center and the Weaver Professor of Oncology and Professor of Microbiology at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. We're also joined by Meredith Gunter, who co-founded Patients and Friends at the UVA Cancer Center, online at uvapatientsandfriends.org. Welcome to you both. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you, Coy. It's nice to be here.
Thank you, and thank you very much for inviting us.
And Meredith, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about your story and what led you to get interested in the experience of patients and friends at UVA.
Oh, thanks, Coy. I have been through the experience of being diagnosed with breast cancer three times in my life. And each time I was slightly ahead of the research curve. That is, when I came out of treatment the first time, they put me on a drug and said, we don't have all the studies about this drug yet. We'll tell you in 5 years when you've been on it if you should stay on it for 10 years. And by the time the 5 years were up, they did have a recommendation for me. But I am now on a drug that they haven't put a final time limit on, and I think I've been on it longer than a lot of people, and I guess I'll be part of the knowledge base that determines how much people should do this in the future.
Yeah.
So I got really interested in the fact that medicine doesn't know everything, and I sort of expected my doctors to know everything and have really clear answers to everything.
Is that the one part of the experience that you think most people don't know? Who've never had to experience something like this?
I think it's a little surprising to people that they might walk in and not get absolutely clear answers, or might walk in and be asked, well, what would you like to do in this case?
Right.
And then in that case, cancer treatment and care becomes a set of personal decisions that you make as a patient and with your family.
We're not raised to make those kind of decisions. Who's prepared for those kind of decisions, you know?
Yeah, well, you really aren't. And I think that's why it's so wonderful to be in a place where I feel like I'm talking to some of the top national experts in the area of cancer. You know, in Charlottesville, we're so lucky to have two really good medical facilities in this area and, of course, Augusta Medical Center nearby. But beyond those who are fortunate enough to be treated at UVA, the medical center and the university, through its nursing and medical schools, trains the doctors, the nurses, the researchers who serve in community hospitals across Virginia, and really keeps them at the cutting edge. And I just love the fact that that center of creating all these great new doctors in the future is right here, and that I've been able to see some of them as a patient. So it's been really nice to talk to people who say, I'm following this line of research. We don't yet know the answer, but here's everything we do know, and
yeah,
participate in this decision with me.
Meredith Gunter co-founded Patients and Friends at the UVA Cancer Center. It's online at uvapatientsandfriends.org. We're also joined live in studio with Dr. Michael Weber. He's director of the UVA Cancer Center. So, Michael, people come from all over Virginia, really. I mean, students come from all over the world, but we have doctors and nurses and who are working in oncology, in this field of trying to help people that have cancer. They come from all across the Commonwealth to Charlottesville, to UVA, to learn the latest.
No, that certainly is true. And let me use as a platform Meredith's comment about being faced with really difficult choices, because we don't really have all of the answers. And unfortunately, a lot of those choices are lousy choices. And I think the purpose of research is to move the field to the point where you don't have to have a choice of lousy choices, where there is really a clear path to a good choice and a good outcome. And there has been progress. I would be the first to admit, though, that if you had asked me 10 years ago where we would be, I would have said we are going to be further ahead than we are.
Yeah. And that was certainly the thinking back in 1971 when President Nixon declared the war on cancer. And we've been thinking for the last 30 or 40 years, well, this will just happen. Next 5 years, this next 7 years, we're just going to see huge breakthroughs. And we have seen some incredible progress. Talk a little bit, if you can, about the progress that we have seen since the war on cancer was declared and what remain the most elusive advances.
Well, I think that the war on cancer conjures up an image which turns out to be inaccurate. The war is actually a guerrilla war, and we have lots of enemies hidden around in different places. It's not like there's one battlefield. And so we're winning a lot of individual battles. But if you sort of step back and you say, my gosh, this is still going on, you say, well, where has the progress been? So there has certainly been progress in areas like breast cancer. Some of it has to do with early detection, and some of it has to do with better therapies. The therapies include surgery. They include radiation treatments, which are increasingly highly focused, so they do minimal damage to the normal tissue. And then there's a whole new armamentarium of drugs. The sort of poster child of the new era of personalized cancer therapy is chronic myelogenous leukemia, or CML, where we have a drug which in 95% of the patients, they are essentially cured if the disease is caught in an early stage. And that was a case where we found out what the gene was that caused the disease. A drug was designed against it. It works. When you put that drug in, the cancer cells die and the normal cells don't. We would like to recapitulate that for other diseases. And the fact that cancer is not one disease, but probably 100 different diseases, and even what we call a single kind of cancer like colon cancer is probably 3 or 4 or 5 different diseases just within the colon cancer world. You know, that has really slowed things up. So we're winning the battle, but it's really just one isolated guerrilla band at a time.
As I understand it, Coy, we used to think about cancer as a strategy of attacking a tumor. Attack the tumor, take it out, radiate a little bit around the area, maybe add a little chemo to make sure the tumor's gone. And what we've learned, really, is that people don't die of tumors. People die of the cells that split off from the tumors and become metastases in other parts of the body, and by really the cancer burden overall on their bodies and on the damage it does to other vital organs. So we had to start to figure out, what about those insurgent cells, those little guerrilla cells that have escaped from the tumor? How can we keep them from leaving the tumor? How can we make them die when they leave the tumor? How can we make sure they're vulnerable to our medicines? And that's the level of research that is being done here that I think is so exciting, because it's going to stop things in its tracks, but it's going to require a very complex strategy.
We're talking with Meredith Gunter and Dr. Michael Weber. Meredith is the co-founder of Patients and Friends at UVA's Cancer Center, online at uvapatientsandfriends.org. And of course, Dr. Weber is director of the UVA Cancer Center. Mike, talk a little bit about the specialty here, that what UVA is known for. And Meredith sort of opened that door, this molecular approach to understanding what's actually happening at that cellular level with what's going on.
Yeah, well, cancer is a disease of bad genes, genes gone bad. And UVA is a center for understanding what the changes are in the way genes work, and how signals that regulate cell behavior get sent. The two Nobel Prizes were won for work that was done here at UVA in this area that's called cell signaling. And the new era of drugs targets specifically those signals and those genes that have gone awry, instead of just randomly poisoning the entire body and hoping that the cancer cells will die first. So I think that it's the discovery of these new targets for cancer drugs, which we have an international reputation for. And there are drugs in practice, you know, sorafenib from Bayer, and then there are two related drugs, one from Novartis and one from a new biotech company called Plexicon, that target a gene called RAF, R-A-F. And the importance of that gene, UVA was one of the key places in uncovering the importance of that gene in cancer.
So you've spent your career studying this stuff. When you look at this and the advances that are being made in this particular area, do you see the future exciting cures coming from this line of research?
Absolutely. I don't see it. I see there are two ways of going about this. One is understanding what these underlying mutations are and designing drugs that will treat them. The other also depends on understanding these mutations, and that is using them for ways of doing early detection. You know, people say, well, why haven't you cured cancer? I say, we know how to cure it. Find it early, cut it out. But frequently we can't. And sometimes we can't really tell which are the bad cancers that are really going to cause problems and which are just kind of weirdos, you know, that are just hanging on down there at the mall or something like that, that are never going to really do any damage, you know. And so it's the molecular profiling of those that we think is going to separate those two categories out. And, you know, in today's paper, there's been a whole lot of stuff about whether people should get breast cancer
screening.
Yeah,
I was going to ask you
so
about
on.
That.
And you know, I think this is a classic example of people having to make choices, and we should be able to give them enough tools that they don't have to say, well, gee, I don't know, should I really be getting screened before I'm 40 or how many times after I'm 50? It should be clear. We should have all of that knowledge. And we don't. And so we have people who look at the data over the last 10 years or so, and they say, well, that's an awful lot of screening, and there's not a whole lot of cancers showing up, and a lot of those cancers aren't real bad, and, you know, maybe we shouldn't be doing it. That last statement is a value judgment. You know, the first part of it is science and data analysis. The last part of it is a value judgment. And it now becomes a matter of a conversation between a doctor and a patient as to how that value judgment plays out.
And yet that science is based on 10 years of the technologies that were 10 years ago. We've got a lot better technology now, don't we, Mike?
That's right. I think that all of these so-called retrospective epidemiologic studies, where you're looking back at what has and hasn't worked in the past, doesn't necessarily take full account of the current state of the art, particularly at the leading edge places. Another recommendation from this group was that people shouldn't be doing breast self-exams. You know, you can interpret that data in another way. So it's clear that breast self-exams don't work.
Well, insurance doesn't pay for them, you know.
Well,
yeah, of course not.
That's true. But they
no
don't,
surprise there.
But they don't work because people aren't doing them properly. So do you say don't do them, or let's make a better effort to train people about exactly how you go about doing it?
So that the exam actually can be really save lives.
Of course. I think almost all of us know somebody who will have discovered a lump in their breast and gone to their
doctor.
From a self-exam.
So, Mike, what's your advice then to women who heard that report this week? You know, and it did sound like when they were making that report that they were painting with an awfully big brush. But
that's right. I think it, again, falls back to a matter of a personal decision and having a conversation with your doctor. And the national community is still split. The American Cancer Society is still recommending that people continue with starting to screen when they're 40 years old.
And is it annual screens or every 5 years? Or
I think every couple of years. You know, I think that one of the reasons you want to do an early screen is so you get a baseline, so that when you do start screening when you're older, you actually know what's changed and what hasn't changed and what you need to watch out for. I think that we should be able to give people fixed rules that are clear, and we don't have the knowledge to do that. And we do mammograms, and we find things on them that look suspicious, and then we have to do biopsies and take a look at them, and we won't know necessarily which are the growths that are going to be causing problems. But if we stop screening, we're never going to solve the problem, because we won't have the materials to actually do the research to figure out which are the bad actors.
And the same debate came up fairly recently about the PSA, too, didn't it?
Yeah,
for prostate screening.
That was in the news.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and again, the argument against the PSA test is not, you know, it's a very inadequate test. But the argument against it is that, well, when you get that result, then you're going to have all sorts of horrible things happening to you, like biopsies in your prostate and so on. And, you know, you don't have to get those biopsies. You can take the knowledge and you can keep it away, and you can do another PSA and see if it's getting worse. You know, I just have always taken the point of view, I've devoted my entire life to the proposition that knowledge is better than ignorance, and screening is a form of knowledge.
And that really, Coy, goes to the question you asked me earlier that I didn't answer, which was about the creation of patients and friends.
Sure, sure.
I was on the elevator in the cancer center, the old cancer center in the hospital, old hospital there, and going up to the fourth floor, and one of the researchers, David Brodigan, got on the elevator with me, and as I was getting off on the fourth floor, which is where the cancer center is, he said, you know, those of us on the fifth and sixth floor, which is where a lot of this research is done, really benefit from seeing patients get off on the fourth floor, because it reminds us why we do what we do. And I thought, as I got off the elevator, I am so grateful that you get on this elevator every day, 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day, your entire life, asking one question: how can we do a better job curing and treating cancer? And I think it's just phenomenal that people dedicate their lives, as Mike has said, to improving our knowledge. And it's very complex.
And we're so fortunate that this kind of thing is right in our backyard.
Absolutely. Know? And you know, it's a really...
These are our neighbors. You
know? These are our neighbors. These are people who have kids in our schools. They're folks who are collaborating. And in part, they're here because it's an academic medical center, because the surgeons get to interact with the chemists and the physicists, and they get to put together their knowledge in ways that might really come up with the breakthroughs that we need in cancer. The problem is, it's a very competitive environment, and every university system in the world is trying to recruit away our best people. And so we need to do everything we can to keep them here, and it's not easy. It costs a lot of money, and they mostly want to feel support for their research efforts. It's not that they rake in enormous salaries. It's that they need money for researchers and petri dishes and microscopes. And
I think that's one of the most exciting things under Tim Garson's leadership as a new provost, is we're seeing such a revolutionary new dedication and commitment at UVA to research, to scientific research.
Right.
New buildings going up everywhere, a new cancer center building. That's
right.
Really exciting, but it all takes dollars, and people have to recognize that we need to support that.
And there are two parts to that. One is, you know, first of all, most researchers who are seriously in this business spend up to as much as 50% of their time applying for grants, which seems to me to be an enormous waste of their talent.
Yeah.
And so I'd like to have more funding for them that makes their situation more secure. The second thing is, the breakthrough ideas, a lot of granting agencies won't fund an idea unless there's some preliminary data behind it. Well, how do you get preliminary data? How do you run a test in a lab and pay for the lab technicians and the petri dishes and the machinery that you need if you don't have some startup funding? So that's really where Patients and Friends comes in. We're an all-volunteer group of patients and former patients and friends and family of patients. And we just go out to the community and to friends and people who are interested in cancer research and say, would you help us create a pool of funds that will give some seed money to these startup ideas, these ideas that have to get a little ground underneath them that might change the way we treat cancer? And there's been an enormous response in our community. And we have kept people here because of not even so much the money, but the fact that the researchers see that the community supports them and honors and values their work.
Meredith Gunter is a co-founder of Patients and Friends at the University of Virginia Cancer Center. It's online at uvapatientsandfriends.org. We've also been talking with Dr. Michael Weber. He is director of the UVA Cancer Center, the Weaver Professor of Oncology, and a professor of microbiology. Thank you both so much for everything you do, and thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.